pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. This is not Jeff Poor. This is Bradley J, Breitbart News political editor, filling in for Jeff today, who is taking a well-earned vacation. Would we say that, Sean Sullivan? Jeff would tell you it's well-earned. Jeff works hard. We love Jeff. Jeff's been great. Known Jeff a long time, for many, many years. He is a keen observer of Alabama politics. He sees a lot that other people don't see. Smart guy. Happy to be filling in for him today. I think one of my favorite items from the news so far this week, and there's been many, I'm sure most listeners are familiar with TMZ. It's basically like the gossip. It started as like a celebrity gossip type website, taken off over the years, is even expanded into Washington now. But TMZ's Harvey Levin did a sit-down video yesterday, all but in tears, blasting Rand Paul for pursuing Anthony Fauci and saying it was heartbreaking. Those were his words. Heartbreaking example of Rand Paul's years-long, quote, witch hunt against Fauci. I mean, these guys, even though there's clear evidence now that, from Fauci's own diaries that have been published, the guy was lying to us. He was lying to the left. He was lying to the right. He was lying to presidents. Every single decision that he was making or that he was contributing to with his supposedly unbiased scientific advice, there was a lot of behind it. Number one, a lot of it was CYA. The guy had been responsible for years and years of taxpayer funding to the Wuhan lab where the virus originated from. I mean, it's all but a certainty now that we know that. And it was pretty obvious even back then that that's where it came from. But Fauci was formulating our response and our handling of the virus based on absolute lies. And look, disclaimer, I am not a scientist or a doctor, but when you make these, when you manufacture these vaccines, there is a very different kind of approach, and you can research this your own if you want. I won't attempt to get too technical, but you manufacture these vaccines in a very significantly different fashion based on the origin of the virus. If it's naturally occurring, basically you go to the left, and if it's human devised, you go to the right. There's a reason why they call them vaccines. I don't know. So I know that Senator Rick Scott, he calls it a shot because he says it's not a vaccine because it's not effective. But the vaccine, part of the reason it was so ineffective is because it was manufactured under the guise of being a naturally occurring virus when it wasn't. How many people died because of Anthony Fauci? I'd wager many more who would have died if there was no Anthony Fauci. Besides the CYA aspect, he was also enriching himself. I mean, that much is basically clear now. If you look at all the deals and everything that he's done and the fame that he's gotten because of the virus, it really is ridiculous. And we talked about this earlier, it was rules for thee, not for me. He didn't believe this stuff that he was saying. He didn't need to be in there in front of the camera every day giving up to the minute supposed updates on this. He loved the camera. He was doing everything that he could to prolong coverage of this virus. And as it makes clear, as his diaries make clear, he was trying to prevent some type of coronavirus October surprise, and because he wanted Trump to get defeated. So the guy was very self-interested in how he handled this. In about 20 minutes or so, we're going to have Nick Gilbertson on to talk more about this. He's Breitbart News White House correspondent and Trump's favorite White House correspondent. We'll talk about that more, too. Some real fun stuff. But, yeah, the Fauci stuff, Republicans, Democrats, everybody should be upset with that. Even John Fetterman, who I think is many Republicans' favorite Democrat. He's serious. If John Fetterman isn't in sweatpants and the Carhartt sweatshirt, you know he came to play ball. There's been a lot of speculation on Fetterman whether or not he is going to switch parties. He's talked a lot about the anti-Semitism that is just running rampant inside the Democrat Party right now. I mean, it's almost just automatic. If you want to run as a Democrat now, you have to be just across the board anti-Israel. And we can talk about if it's appropriate to equate Israel with Jewish people, but to many people that's how they see it. But I don't think there's any question that much of the anti-Israel sentiment in the Democrat Party right now is because people are anti-Semitic. But that's the way that the Democrat Party is. Fetterman has cited that issue as one where he is legitimately troubled at the direction of the party. One reason that I think that there may be some smoke to the fire, if you look at how some of the Republicans are, your typical Republicans who, and look, these are politicians, so you have to judge them through that lens. But some of these Republicans, when they see a deal being made or they see an opportunity to promote themselves, they flock to it like a moth to the flame. You see the way that like the Katie Britts of the world have already tried to get out in front of this, claiming a lot of work in trying to flip Fetterman. And I'm sure that is the case. But the way that they're so openly talking about it suggests to me that maybe Fetterman actually is considering a flip. On the other side of that coin, when Republicans or politicians are staying away from something, that suggests that there is not a deal to be done. I'm thinking of the Todd Blanche nomination for Attorney General. This morning at 8 a.m. Alabama time, there was supposed to be a committee vote on Todd Blanche. He's already been confirmed by the Senate as deputy AG. That took place over a year ago. But he's been nominated to be AG in his own right to replace Bondi to become the full-time AG in a role that he's already acting in and has been for several months now. But you don't see a lot of senators running to try to work with scumbags John Cornyn and Tom Tillis. You would think that these politicians who are so quick to see an opportunity to claim a victory, if they saw something here where they could be able to claim that they were able to work out the impasse between the senators and the Trump administration, they'd be all over that. But the fact that they aren't tells me that this hearing that was delayed today, the committee hearing or the committee meeting where they're going to vote on this, may not be rescheduled anytime soon. The clock is ticking on the Senate being able to finish its work before the August recess. That I believe it's scheduled for 5 weeks. This is when, congratulations, if you wanted to go on a trip this year, if you're on that Jeff Poor plan, I don't know where Jeff Poor is right now. He's vacationing somewhere. But if you wanted to go on a trip this year and didn't make it, don't worry about it, because you've been funding a lot of these lawmaker junkets around the world. August is when, on your dime, they travel to every country imaginable. I'm sure every single, or at least half of them, will be in Ukraine. I mean, there are countries you've never heard of. These lawmakers and their spouses will be traveling the world with these countries, putting their best foot forward, plying them with the best food and wine, and taking them to all these scenic places on this, you know, they call it a CODEL, a congressional delegation trip, where supposedly they're learning more about the issues that and the countries with which they work with. I mean, a lot of it's a bunch of bunk. I'll give Matt Gaetz credit for this. He was very open about saying, he's like, look, most of us who are in Congress, this was back when he was in Congress, most of us could be making a lot more money than the $180,000, $185,000 a year that they make, whatever it is. But if you actually take advantage of all the perks of being a congressman, you can turn it into a $500,000 a year job. Good for him for being so open about that, I guess. But there's certainly a lot of members of Congress who take advantage of those taxpayer-funded trips, and that's how they will be spending their August. We talked earlier in the program about how there's two ways that things get done in the Senate. One is by consent. The other is by exhaustion. A key component of that exhaustion is when you come up against these previously scheduled recesses, particularly these long ones like the August recess, where these lawmakers have these taxpayer-funded trips already planned. I mean, there's months and months of work that goes into most of those. You can't just postpone it a day or a week or whatever. There's so many moving parts of these. Man, that's when that exhaustion factor starts kicking in. And if a majority leader would keep a member of would keep these House and Senate chambers open for days at a time, maybe even make these lawmakers work and vote at night leading up to that these recess where they've got their trips scheduled, man. All of a sudden, you'll start seeing the votes for cloture. They want to stop debating this nonsense as they see it and stop voting and get out of Dodge, get out of town, saying go on these trips. But the fact that Dune does not do that tells you that he isn't serious about passing the Save America Act. But yeah, Todd Blanch, look, there's precedent that as long as that nomination is pending, he can continue to serve and that acting capacity. Biden did that with one of his nominees who didn't have the votes in the Senate, but he kept the nomination pending. So for like 2 years, I don't even recall which member of his administration it was, but she stayed on in an acting capacity because her nomination was technically pending, even though it didn't have the votes. So this is just Cornyn and Tillis trying to stick Trump in the eye. A lot of these lawmakers, when they get in this situation where they've either lost or they're not running again because they couldn't win, looking at you, Tom Tillis, they talk about how their colleagues are they talk about how, like, I'm finally now free to operate as I see fit and vote my conscience and all that. And they say it so self-righteously, but if you look at that, they're saying that when they were up for re-election, they weren't voting with their conscience. So, I mean, they're playing themselves when they say that, and it reveals how duplicitous and disgusting so many of these politicians are. Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. But we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with the Jeff Poore Show.
Still are, it seems, sadly in search of, and one step in back of themselves, and they're slow moving.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show. This is Bradley J. again. Up next, in a few minutes, we're going to have Nick Gilbertson, our Breitbart News White House correspondent. We're going to have a good discussion. Looking forward to that. I'm looking across the nation at some of these Senate races. And look, first off, it's very clear that Chuck Schumer is holding on to power by a thread. And it's ironic because this is a guy who does not have, I don't think he has a single conviction. I mean, this other than power, he wants power. He is one of the most notorious flip-floppers in Washington. I mean, here's a guy who, I mean, was adamant for a border wall back in the day, as were most Democrats, because, again, that's such a common-sense policy. But, man, as soon as that evil orange guy starts talking about it, they all flip-flopped on it. And he's from New York. He's from New York City. I forget which borough he's from, but I mean, this guy was Wall Street's best friend for the longest time. Was their best friend in the Senate. Man, when the political winds start blowing a different direction, he reverses course. But it's ironic that somebody without any convictions now is in danger of losing power because he isn't sufficiently left-wing. It's a little bit delicious. I look at this Maine Senate race. Obviously, Schumer was very much against Graham Plattner, who was forced to step aside just a couple weeks ago. He was adamantly behind Janet Mills, who's the sitting governor of Maine, who, you know, one thing about having already won statewide office, she was, one poll had her the fourth most unpopular governor in the country. But even so, she's vetted. Schumer got behind her, pushed her. She was getting blown out. She didn't even make it to the primary. She quit the race before the primary because Plattner was going to spank her so bad. Anyway, Plattner's out of the way there. This new guy Maine Democrats have, he totally got Kamala'd. They went to a convention. Everybody else had already resigned, stepped aside, except I think one outside candidate before the vote. But like 600 delegates chose this Troy Jackson guy. He was a Republican up until maybe 15 years ago or so, but ran for office as a Republican. He wears, you know, the rugged, the Carhartt, the baseball caps. He talks about how he's a logger and has a pickup truck. The guy just ran for governor this cycle. So he just a few weeks ago finished third in a statewide primary. This is the best guy that the Maine Democrats could get to try to capture that populist appeal of Graham Plattner, but still kind of get the establishment folks behind him. I mean, I don't think that that's going to work. Chuck Schumer, I don't believe, has formally endorsed him because he's such a taint now on any of these candidates running statewide. His machinery is quietly helping Troy Jackson, but if Chuck Schumer touches him or is too out in front on advocating for him, I mean, the Democrat voters are going to abandon him. That's the state of Chuck Schumer's leadership right now. The party's just changing so fast. And I wonder when we're going to start seeing that DSA, the Democrat socialist type energy in candidates in Alabama. You know, you've seen these candidates win in a lot of these super blue districts, like in New York, you had the Mamdani massacre where the three candidates he had endorsed won, just maybe that was 6 weeks ago or so. But you're starting to see these candidates win primaries in Colorado. You're starting to see them win in other states in the Midwest. If this is the direction that the Democrat Party is going, if their base is dictating who wins these elections, if they start repelling moderates and independents in favor of just absolutely ginning up turnout, with their radical base, which is something that other candidates have tried with varying success for Democrats in recent cycles. If that's a new playbook, when are we going to start seeing these types of candidates in Alabama? I mean, a lot of these Alabama Democrats, in many ways, indistinguishable from the Republicans. They just do what the big mules in Montgomery want, but it might be something. This first day with me guest hosting. We'll be back tomorrow. It's kind of been a little bit more of a D.C. focused day today while I'm here in Washington, but we may talk a little bit more Alabama tomorrow. Just feel free to email me or send me a direct message or text me or something with anything you want us to talk about, and we'll be sure to do it. But before then, we have a special guest on the line now, my colleague at Breitbart News, our White House correspondent, and dare I say, President Trump's favorite White House correspondent. There's certainly some evidence there. Mr. Nick Gilbertson, Nick, I appreciate you calling in today.
Hey, Bradley. Thanks for having me. Great to be here. That's quite the introduction. I don't know if I'm necessarily his favorite, but...
Well, what was it that he said to you? It's been several weeks ago now when he liked a question that you'd ask. What did he say?
That was back in April, but he did call me handsome, which was interesting. That was a funny one. I've gotten praise here and there a few times actually, so
it was great. We had so many folks. I had so many people text me about the president just called Nick handsome. He went on and on. You're being a little humble. He went on and on and praised you how wonderful you are. And I know that y'all have a fun relationship. I know you've been in the Oval Office with him interviewing him, and just Breitbart and Trump interviews, and of course they're in the press gaggles all the time. One of those was yesterday, and it was an especially fun one because it was after Fauci's hearing, where Fauci had pleaded the fifth. Of course, as we now know from Fauci's diaries, he had carefully crafted many of his suggestions and much of his advice to the president and the administration during the pandemic, based on trying to hurt the president politically. Some really wild stuff. Tell us what your biggest takeaway was from that reporter gaggle with the president yesterday about Fauci.
Yeah, my biggest takeaway was just the president weighing in on it. We asked a couple of questions about it. First of all, somebody just got his kind of general reaction to Fauci invoking the Fifth Amendment north of 100 times during that committee hearing yesterday. Just, I think, really unprecedented moment, too, for somebody with a presidential pardon coming from Joe Biden to go ahead and do that. I don't think we've ever had a situation like that in the history of the country. I think Rand Paul, who's the committee chairman on the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, who kind of headed up that hearing yesterday. But the president came out and he said, "I watched the whole thing, but more importantly, I inherited Fauci. He was here from the 1980s, so I had him for a period of time, and I disagreed with him a lot. I would have had to close down the whole country if I listened to him. I went the Federalist way, which is basically let the governors decide. And generally speaking, the Republican governors did very well. The Democrat governors did not do very well." And there he's, of course, talking about during COVID, giving the discretion to governors as to whether they want to close things down in their states, like schools, restaurants, bars, gyms, really any place in the public where people gather, or close them up or keep them open. And of course, Republicans were much better about keeping things open and much broader guidance than Democrats did. And believe me, I grew up in Massachusetts, Bradley, and I lived there during all of this, and it was like an absolute crackdown, like almost communist type regime, authoritative state trying to do anything in the state. And I know other places like down in Florida, Alabama too, where it was much more free than it was for, you know, people in states like Massachusetts or California or New York, where the government was literally, you know, closing everything off, not letting people really do anything. And so, you know, I also wanted to get President Trump's take on why he thinks Fauci went ahead and invoked this Fifth Amendment right, I think 111 times. I saw in one report, 107 another. Wow. Regardless, it's a massive number, right, to go ahead and do it that much. But I asked him, you know, why he thinks Fauci did that, even though he has the pardon. And the president, you know, emphasized he's never been a fan of Fauci, but said, you know, for one reason or another, his lawyers told him to do that. And he's not sure if he would have been better off not doing it. But that's really the president's take on why it happened. I was thinking maybe, he might give a little more on it. Maybe Fauci has something to hide there or give a little insight into what he thinks was going on. But that's where the president landed on that.
Yeah, and that's interesting, Nick, because it seems like the president, unlike Fauci, the president will usually actually tell you what's on his mind. He much more transparently. But I wonder if in a situation like this, and you detailed the president's response, and it was very much he stayed away from any legal kind of discussion, it seems like.
Right.
I mean, do you think that he might have done that, avoided weighing in, because this might be something, maybe, like I think of like the auto pen, the legality of that type of pardon. Do you think that the president may strategically stay away from this because it might be something that comes before his Department of Justice at some point?
I absolutely think that might be the case, Bradley. It's probably a very delicate matter for him speak on, weigh in on at the moment, and he's very careful about things like that. And you know, you won't hear him weighing in on matters from the Department of Justice, and this could very well end up at the Department of Justice here. For one reason, as you pointed out, this was an auto pen pardon, and of course those are under immense scrutiny and review by the president. I know those are getting challenged in the courts. I think Hunter Biden was one of the only really ones that Biden signed that were actually done with his actual signature. So I think for one matter there, you have a reason why, for legal reasons, he may not want to be super gung-ho on weighing in and going scorched earth here on Fauci. Another reason, too, is Rand Paul is holding a vote next week to find Fauci in contempt of Congress. And the Justice Department, if Fauci is found in contempt, which there's certainly a chance that he is, the Justice Department can take this up, and then it becomes a case over at the DOJ, and then the president certainly can't comment on it.
Yeah, and we talked earlier in the program about there's so many issues with Fauci pleading the Fifth. Can he do so if the pardon is valid or not? What does it mean if the pardon is determined to be invalid? If you look at precedent, can he even give – does the pardon protect him if he's – like what does the pardon protect him from? Can it protect him there are a lot of questions. I mean, he gave an opening statement. Can you – give an opening statement if you're pleading the Fifth and then not answer questions? There are so many different paths to go down. But you talk about contempt and Rand Paul. Rand Paul is someone who he has a very interesting relationship with President Trump. Rand is a very smart guy. He's not the warmest personality. He and President Trump, you know, they play golf from time to time, but they certainly aren't buddies like I think of like Lindsey Graham and Trump were, and certainly not in the way that, you know, Coach Tuberville, our senator from, here from Alabama, they're certainly not buddies the way that, that Trump and Tuberville are. How do you think this hearing will shape their dynamic? I know that the president has made some statements about Rand recently on Truth Social, but did the president weigh in on kind of how he thought that Rand did and maybe how this might affect their relationship?
I was planning on asking a question about that, actually, Bradley. I think the president and Rand certainly have a very interesting relationship, as you pointed out. He can't necessarily bank on the senator for a vote in the way he does other senators, kind of like you just pointed out. This is merely Rand sticking to his principles on certain things, whether it be the debt ceiling or funding issues, right? He'll often break with the president on those if he thinks spending's getting too much or whatnot. At the same token, I do think the president respects Rand Paul. I think especially, and he understands how capable Rand is, especially on issues of a shared, you know, common interest. I would imagine the president, of course, I'm mind reading here, was, you know, he said he watched the whole thing yesterday. So I don't think he could have watched that objectively as anybody really and not be impressed with Rand Paul, who's a doctor, right? And he can speak Fauci's language on all this stuff. I think Rand did a great job yesterday. I certainly respect Rand. He certainly is a principled conservative, and he's going to march to the beat of his own drummer. And that's kind of always how he's been. He's not always going to be there with President Trump, but I think I think that they do share a lot of areas of a shared common interest, right? And I think this is probably one of them is investigating Fauci and getting to the bottom of this stuff.
Yeah, you talk about him being a principled conservative. Like, not everybody may share those principles, but man. If Rand is on your side, he's a good ally to have. And you talk about this being, I mean, Rand is a medical doctor. He understands this issue, and this has been something that he's been on a long time. So he's certainly a great ally on this issue. Was this yesterday? Was this something that opened up to the entire pool, or did they hand pick a few reporters to go in and talk with the president?
Just so the audience understands, there's usually a rotating press pool every day that goes in. When President Trump has an event where he's bringing the pool in, right? So there's on a given day, there's, you know, one or two television correspondents, one from various outlets, one television camera, about two print correspondents, and one person in the new media seat, which is the seat that, Breitbart News is in when we have our pool day, which is, you know, once every couple weeks or so, something like that, where I'll go in and, you know, I'm just there at the White House. Anytime the president wants to do an event with the press, you know, I go in, and it's just those restricted members of, you know, reporters, photographers, videographers that go in. At times, they'll do what's called an expanded pool, where they'll bring in additional reporters into an event on top of the reporters that they're already bringing in. So yesterday, I was in the expanded pool. It wasn't my pool day, but I did get to go ahead and go in for that event and get a question off there to the president.
What's it? That's interesting. But for so long, the outlets that were deemed appropriate to even be part of the pool were just, I mean, these establishment rags. And the president, just this administration opened it up to Breitbart. I mean, the very first press briefing Caroline gave, our boss Matt Boyle was in the new media seat there on stage, asked the first or the second question I believe, of this new administration. So it's just it's remarkably different. But in just the last couple of minutes we have, could you explain maybe what the dynamics are? That I know that you have to work with these people and you don't want a dog on them, but like what's it like? Is there a resentment from these establishment reporters who used to have just a stranglehold on what the news is, what gets reported? They were gatekeepers, and now they're other seats of the table. What's that dynamic?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. There's a lot, certainly you get the vibe that they look down on Breitbart or other outlets that are in the room, and you know, they're not part of their little club that goes to the White House Correspondents' Dinner and they all give each other awards, right? Like they did a couple of last Friday night and have a big celebration of one another in that regard. But you know, I on the other side too, these are people that you know, I see on a daily basis, and I do have a cordial relationship with a lot of them. I've never gotten into a conflict with any of the, maybe one or two here or there, right? But it's, for the most part, it's a cordial relationship, and I understand that they're going to be going in their lane and I'm going to be going in my lane, and just on a day-to-day basis, try and have a decent interaction with them on a personal level.
Really fascinating stuff. Nick Gilbertson, Breitbart News, White House correspondent. Nick, we appreciate you joining the Jeff Poor Show today. We'll be right back after a quick break. My best friend, laughing at the late night show. I don't know what's wrong with me, 'cause I know I need my rest. But if I don't stay up all night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Hey! Yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hell raisers. People get out of our way wherever we go.
Come into your life like I do every night from the heart of your radio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheap songs. Here's hoping everybody out in radio land finds a love just as true as mine. Good night, angel. Sleep tight, darling, and close your pretty brown eyes.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. This is Bradley J. We're kind of wrapping up here. This has been a real treat for me. People ask me all the time where I'm from, usually whenever I'm in D.C., usually, I mean, because of my accent. But when I explain that I'm from Monroe County or Monroeville, and people ask me where I'm from, some who are vaguely familiar, you know, I'll say Southwest Alabama, or I'll say from the To Kill a Mockingbird town, or the literary capital of Alabama, or whatever. But the few who kind of have a semblance of where that is, they'll ask me if that's near to Montgomery or Mobile. And I explained it to someone the other day like this. When I was young, we were living in, I guess, in or near Mexi, Alabama, which is outside of Monroeville. And my dad would leave the back door open, and I was, you know, just a little young pup, I guess, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5. And he would have to go out and turn that big, tall TV antenna one way or the other, to the left or the right, to either pick up the Mobile TV stations if the antenna was pointing just right, or if we wanted to try to pick up the Montgomery stations, we would have to point it in the opposite direction. But he would crack the back door open, and I would yell whether or not it would, you know, it's getting good, too much. You know, it's kind of like tuning a guitar. And then I got old enough where I guess my dad would put me to work a little bit more, and I would be the one who was, once I was strong enough, who would have to turn it to the left or turn it to the right. So we were kind of right there in between Mobile and Montgomery, but we could still pick up FM talk 1065. So that was it's been a real treat being on today with y'all. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be in Cecil, Alabama, broadcasting. So really excited about that. But yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I don't know where Jeff Poor is right now. I assume he's traveling. He loves it to do his fam jams and gather up the tribe and travel. And so good for him for getting a little bit of time off. Wherever he is, I hope he's having a good time. But tomorrow you'll have me again. Ping me if there's anything you want to talk about. There's a lot we can cover. We can definitely talk more about Alabama stuff. But this has been Bradley J. signing off the Jeff Poor Show.